Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, welcome to Behind the Blue Curtain. I'm your host, Stan Mason. I started with that, and for all the haters that I know, you're gonna go and do a copyright thing. I already posted the standard thing in there, but that song just seemed to me relevant for right now, where we are in America. And America right now, for most of us, is our world right now. This for me, this has been a rough week. You know, you go through your, you know, your points where you're just, so much of this crap, you get beat down. Especially for all the co-hosts that tell you, when you're doing these shows and you're researching and you're seeing the things and you're feeling the people's pain and their anguish and it takes a toll on you. It really, really does. You get depressed. You get, why do I do this? Who really cares? The world doesn't care. And then I kind of call a few people and you get pumped up. And you say, we do this for, at least for this show and for Stan's part in this show. And everybody you see here, there's no Stan as the leader and everybody else. We're all equal parts of this. For me and my part, I do it for the people that I served in Waco, but mostly for the people who are the least. 646-716-4621. That's the number here. There is no 10 seconds, thank you for calling, goodbye, click. This is some place where you can call and vent and say how you feel, whether you agree with any of us or whether you don't agree. We don't really care. And we do this show because just maybe this show can interrupt somebody's thought process so that we don't have another massage parlor shooting like we had in Atlanta. We don't have another shooting like we had in Boulder. And, you know, in it, and like I said, for those who tune in, this is not an anti-police show. Because if some officers went through some horrific things that they got to live with, it's there. It's in the memory. We pay you to do your job. Yeah, but the memories are there. Good morning, Paul. You know, everything is there. What's up, Ty? Call in, bro. You know, everything is there. And they got to walk around with. Beyond the news clipping, beyond the video footage we all see, whether it's Boulder or whether it's Atlanta, there's some young people, probably young people, that now have to live with the memory of what they saw on the floor. That when the news media blows over, when all of the flashing mirrors are gone, and they're struggling with whether it was a relative, especially when it was a police officer that was killed, a good guy, and trained his children in CPR, not to rescue white people or black people or Republicans or Democrats. Search their wallet first, see if they're Republican or a Democrat, but to save lives, his children. This show is about being real. I stand personally. I'm not speaking for anybody here. They'll speak for themselves. I don't care about anybody's feelings here. I don't care if I got one listener or 1,000. There's no GoFundMes here. There's no sponsors here. We don't want them. There's no commercials here. There's no Republican or Democrat, black or white. It is just real and it's straight up. And anybody who disagrees or has a varying opinion from ours, good morning, Janine, you can call in 646-716-4621, press 1. I will put you on as long as you make sense. When you get nonsensical, we'll say, hold on, let the co-host and everybody come in. What's up, Billy? But on here, I got to give my shout-outs before I go with my long introduction. You know, Waco, Texas, I love y'all, appreciate y'all. Everybody who's been here, supported the show. You know, when we were just a Facebook Live, in fact, before Facebook Live, we'll go back to the 90s, when I was just me on the street and you on the street and we met. You know, those are the days I look back to now. It ain't this show. I don't sit back and look at, what did I say last week or what happened? You know, I look at when I met you. That's what we do here. We want to change lives. Not for credit to the show. That's why we bring the guests we bring. People don't always come here with PhDs. People come here with their triumph of overcoming drug addiction. People come here that were suicidal. People come here that have been to prison. People come here on this show that have changed their lives. And I'm not going to preach a sermon, but I'm going to say this to clear the air. God mandated me to do this. And he didn't tell me to be polite. He told me to be real. Some of you who may, you know, you know me only from here. You've never met me. You've never seen me. You just know me from what you see here. Hook up with these people from Waco who do know me, and they will tell you what you see right now. In 2021, was Officer Stan Mason in 1994, 2004, 2014. We make sure y'all see this every week because you all are that important to us. With that, I'm bowing out. Let me step up and say good morning, everybody. Let me call Big Johnny. What's up, bro?
Hey, what's going on, man? Good to be here, man. I'm ready to rock the road for another explosive show. It's going to be a lot of pain and a lot of information that comes out on the show today. And, I look forward to my co-host bringing it, you know. So, you know, to all the families that suffered through this, our prayers with you.
Amen, bro. Let me go down. What's up, Chief? How was your week? What's going on, Big Hewitt?
Well, I mean, am I on you?
No, you're good.
It's been a busy week, as it always is. Families shouldn't have to be healthy, so can't complain about that. Work is business. Work. You know, got a bunch of promotions done. We celebrated those lieutenants and sergeants that moved forward in our organization. And so had a retirement yesterday for my, one of my employees, code enforcement officer. So we celebrated him too. So it's been a good week. And then next week, I look forward to the Texas Police Chiefs Conference in Fort Worth, where we will go and hopefully have a voice in some of the change.
Can I call?
Yeah, 1:30 Monday. But you know, get in there and start talking about some real change. I do like a lot of what they're proposing for the state of Texas. So you know, some I'm not so sure about, but we'll get through it. And I think at the end of the day, everybody will be happy about it once this legislative session's over.
All right, Chief. Appreciate you. Let me see, Reverend T, what's up, bro?
Hey, how you guys doing? Can you hear me okay, number one?
Yep, you sound great.
Okay, well, sorry I'm late, everybody. I try not to be late. I try to be on time and early, but I've had some major PC issues, which, you know what, we have a lot of, you know, things to go over today that are serious, and I'm not going to make light out of that, but one day we need to do a show about everything that goes on with your technical life. You know, I couldn't log on because of the Windows update and then the Windows firewall, and I don't have my everything expired. So basically, I'm not being allowed to log in because I have to pay my annual subscription. And as a nation, we're held hostage, you know, by all of these streaming and pay services. And the tech world has found a way to pimp us out. They make us pay for something every single year. And if you auto-renew, you get like a 10% discount. So that's what I was dealing with, having to renew all of my things to have access to my own computer. We got to do a show about that, but enough about that.
All right, bro. But anyway, you know what? A dime, I'm probably the oldest one here. A dime used to be able to make a phone call. You know, there ain't even phone booths today. You can't do nothing but a dime or drop one on somebody. That gets you put in the dirt. Let's drop down. Big Izzy, what's up, man?
Oh, not much. Happy to be here. I'd love to watch Tony's show about complaining about internet service. That was a very dramatic call to action over dealing with, like, Verizon Fios. I'm with you.
And you know, Joe couldn't join us this morning. As everybody knows, you know, Joe is got hired on and went back to work to bail out another police department, and he's going in there making some changes and bringing them up to speed. And we missed the brother. He was here earlier. You know, we always miss Joe. Joe has that big following. Everybody loves Joe. So in honor of Joe,
Aquarius, Libra, Leo, Cancer, Ralph, Charles, Paul, Larry.
Okay, we had to leave out with Larry. You know, all right. Look. All joking aside, you know, I searched last night and trying to put together a bio or a little narrative for this show. You know, Big John, did we get up to you? Did I get you? Did I forget?
I believe so.
Oh, my bad, bro.
Okay.
I was trying to put together something, and I racked my mind. I couldn't find anything snappy or smart or detailed. And the only thing between the massage parlor shootings in Atlanta and Boulder, Colorado, I had my Izzy hat on. I was Gentleman Izzy, and I'm like, America has gotten back to normal. in all of the COVID, where we were locked up at home and had to stay at home and were trying to get our shots, struggling with why we couldn't get them. But I'm like, you know, America is like, oh, we forgot to go out and kill random people who have nothing to do with our screwed up life. And we seem to be snapping back to American norms. Now, people who are American will go, well, that's not true. Bullshit. It is true. Oh, I forgot to say. We will use colorful metaphors here. You'll hear them. So, you know, you might want to watch your kids. And I always mark the show if you go to the YouTube, not for kids. But I'm like, how quick did we get back to America, a nation with one people, let's get together, let's vaccinate, let's do this. And we snapped right back into this, me and my life is a catastrophe, or I'm on some missionary zeal, so therefore nobody else deserves to live because I'm screwed up. And how are we going to deal with that? And I'm going to open the floor. I'll let whoever wants to chime in first, go ahead and chime in. If any of the callers want to call in, 646-716-4621, press 1. We'll put you on. Also, I want to touch on, because Tony, I know you're going to go off on this. Izzy, I know you will. This, Georgia, I mean, we did the thing. Not because Democrats won, but because everybody got a chance to vote. And some people don't like it, and that's gotten stripped away. But let's start out with this American psycho. And I couldn't even think of a better title. I could, but it would have been too explicit to put up here. So let's open it up. First, I want to get from the chief. Can you, chief, tell us, law enforcement perspective, you know, from the officer at that scene, that's got to walk through these bodies. I'm not talking about it. People think this is CSI, where the officers show up on scene, and they're walking around these bodies for 15 minutes, and then automatically the court. There are measurements, all the things that go into place where these people got to stand there and look at this. And for those who say, well, that's what you get paid to do, then pay us for the nightmares to come with it. And I'm off that soapbox. Go ahead, Chief. You have the floor.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think as of yesterday, they still hadn't released the crime scene in Boulder. Right? So how many days were we talking there? Now the bodies probably have been removed after measurements and crime scene has been done, but you still have the aftermath and the effects. You can pretty much tell exactly what happened. It's a scenario, not only in Atlanta, it's a scenario in Boulder that is hard to prepare the officers for. When we talk about these type of attacks, and I'm going to call them active attacks. And as we go through here today, you will not hear me mention the suspect's name. And that's by design. And the reason I'm not going to mention their names is simply because they don't deserve notoriety that they so prescribed to have for whatever reason. And again, it's still very early in the investigation, whether there's a manifesto or a written note or social media post about them doing this. They just don't deserve notoriety. We need to lift up the victims. And talk about them versus these two knuckleheads. I've been teaching, we call it ALERT in Texas. It's a program for response to these active shooter events. That's what it started as, active shooter events. Now they're called active attacks because we're not dealing just with guns now. We're dealing with knives. We're dealing with people getting in vehicles and mowing folks over. That's been going on for years. But in that course, in that preparation, when I teach this course in the police academy, when I teach it to officers during continual education, because this is something that needs to be refreshed, it's hard to teach the component of the aftermath. And there's several slides about the aftermath and when we talk about this and what's going to happen. I usually put it into this type of perspective for the officers that attend these courses. When we deal with the schools, right? We use the schools as an example, even though Schools are not the most targeted areas for these. It's businesses. You imagine being an officer living in your community and responding to your children's, your child's school with a gunman in there. So that's what you have to prepare yourself to see, right? That children that may be friends with your children, dead or dying, or maybe even your child or your loved one. I mean, my wife teaches here locally at one of our schools. My son attends that school. Imagine what that would be like with an active attack taking place, and I have to respond there. The aftermath is horrific, and it continues to perpetuate. It's something that we'll never forget as we get into this crime scene. You know, as I said, Boulder, they hadn't released the crime scene back yet. That means there are people in there continually dealing with that crime scene to get the full investigation done. They're walking through all of that. And again, you can tell exactly what happens. And it causes some issues for some folks. So there's a huge, big, I know we're going to get into mental health with these people, but there's that mental health component on the other side, which is the first responder side, that needs to be upheld and needs to be pushed forward versus, you know, through debriefing and emergency assistance or employee assistance programs and even further into that. I know we'll get into a lot of that stuff, but you're 100% correct, Stan. It's a nightmare. I don't envy those personnel that have to go in there. You know, we've seen it time and time again. We start talking about Sandy Hook, the issues that caused with the first responders, Columbine. I mean, you name the event. It has created on the law enforcement side. I'm not talking about the victim side, but the law enforcement or first responder side. It's created some significant issues. These are bad things. These are horrible, horrible incidents.
You know, Chief, and I think that the major media, everybody is hyped on the cosmetics of it. And what I want to really focus on today, and you were so on point, is let's look at the humanity, the aspect of you know, the officers living with this nightmare. If you don't like police officers and you want to go tune into something else, that's fine. I won't miss you. Holler at you. Those people and those families. I mean, Chief, you and I have had to, whether it's a tragic accident or whether it was a shooting, we've done that knock on the door. And for me, when I had to do the knock or do the talk at the hospital at the ER, not only did I know the victim, but I knew the family. And that's hard.
It is hard. It's a dynamic that I'm not sure a lot of people understand. You know, we're supposed to be seen as unemotional robots.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're dealing with someone's deceased loved one, that's hard to do. It's hard to do. We even got to the point where, and this is just something that I want to point out, that I have our chaplain that will assist us with these incidents. Because the officers are not good at it. I mean, how do you tell a person not to be emotional? I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. You have to be empathetic and show some emotion when you're dealing with one of these issues. Because then you come off, if you don't, you come off cold and uncaring. And that's not what we want a victim's family to feel, you know. And I don't want to mention, I'm just going to say it right now, because I said at the beginning, we should talk about these victims versus the pictures of these knuckleheads you got in the background. But Denny Strong, Devin Stanistic, Ricky Olds, Trolando Barkowski, Suzanne Fountain, Terry Liker, Kevin Mahoney, Lynn Murray, Jacob Waters, and, of course, the officer in Boulder that was killed within 30 seconds of arrival. And I found that yesterday because Boulder PD apparently had been catching some flack about response. Officer Tally, right? And that was his name, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Eric Tally. Officer Tally was on scene within 30 seconds of receiving the phone call. He and other officers had formed a REACT team, which is a small tactical team to go make entry into that to stop that event. 30 seconds. And in 30 seconds, Stan, if Joe was here, he that are pretty for law enforcement. And you feel instantly as they began to approach and go in to stop it. And we'll get into some of the dynamics, and I think there's a lot of people that may not know how we're supposed to handle these incidents, and Columbine really started this whole change of pace versus sending SWAT contain the perimeter and call SWAT because they're the ones that are trained to do it. We don't do that anymore. If you're a patrol officer, you could be a brand new recruit today, right on your own, first day out of the box, and get one of these calls, and guess what you're doing? You're going in to stop the killing. That's what you're doing. And that's just the mission of these types of events, because the longer you wait, the more lives will be lost. But, again, I go back to, I'm not going to mention these guys' names, but the victims, we need to lift up the victims and their families, because they died for doing nothing. Just as you said, Stan, somebody, because whatever the reasoning is, they were murdered by somebody because they felt like they didn't deserve to live for whatever reason. I don't know the motive. I really don't care what the motive is. They were murdered. These two are murderers. That's it.
You'll probably never have a motive, and I'm just kind of sticking my beak in, because I guess your point, motives are not important at this point. And you can ask this country, I just want to stick to America, not really focus on the world. But how do you stop being victims? And when you look at what we've got in this nation, what are we trying to accomplish at the end of this? I mean, and I respect you, Chief, as always, and I respect the division of law enforcement and some major media not to release the person's name. But it's become so standard. Here's what we do. Here is our SOP. We're going to talk about it. We won't mention his name. But not mentioning somebody's name has never prevented, another catastrophe of happening. Here's my point with that. It's the fact that we have to look at this nation of exactly what it is. There are a lot of things you could look at and unpack. America is a very angry country. We've always been a very angry country. And there's nothing on television, which is the primary source people get their information, unfortunately, about how to deal with mental illness and anger. There are more commercials for erectile dysfunction than there are about mental dysfunctionality. What are you dealing with? This guy here in Boulder should have never been approved. He passed the background check. His high school classmates talked about, he would talk about, hey, they're following me. Who? He was given probation for something he had done back in 2018, and I'm not saying that if you make one mistake, it should be a lifetime sentence, but in this case, he did everything and was approved by everything federally, but he still had mental issues, and there's nothing in this country that is proactive. If you think about it, we are not a proactive country, and people can say, well, Tony, what do you mean by that? Well, just look at the amount of bridges. Do you know why we don't have a budget right now to fix bridges, just bridges in this country? Why not? Because they haven't fallen down. That's the biggest reason. And until they fall down, and God forbid this happens to anybody, I mean to anybody, until a bridge finally does collapse in some country and 48 cars and trucks and 100 whatever and 3,000 people die because the bridge collapsed in the ocean, then they'll say, you know what, I guess we should fix that bridge. And that's where we are in this country. There are, I forgot what they call them. They're pork spending, whatever, where you have these accounts in government, and the money is allotted to do things. But then the politicians find a way to skim off that money because nothing has happened, and then that money kind of disappears from those accounts. So my thing is, what could have been done to stop this guy in Colorado from doing that, from the yo-yo in Georgia from doing that? And quite honestly, there's nothing. Even if you call and say, look, I'm John Q. Public, I know somebody I don't think is mentally stable, and I hope they never get a gun. What do you want law enforcement to do? What do you want the federal government to do if they have done no crime? I'm going to be honest right now, and I don't think anybody in my family is on here. I have a relative. I love him to death. I have one relative who I fear would ever get a handgun. He's got mental issues. He's got anger issues. And I can tell you right now, I look at him, and he has got the persona of a serial killer. And when I say that, I can see him getting a gun, going somewhere, and shooting a bunch of people for no, they have no reason. They just pick a place. Why this city? Why this store? They don't know. That just because, you know what, the red attracted me. And it was either this store or McDonald's. Whoever had red like a bull, I'm drawn to that color. Why? I don't know. I'm crazy and I'm violent and I don't have a way of working out my issues. I can see this relative of mine doing that and just shooting a bunch of people, running around, and then when he's forced or faced with law enforcement, either suicide by a cop or him just blowing his own brains out. What if I call law enforcement right now? They would say, well, hey, you know, he hasn't done a crime. And I get it. Law enforcement is reactionary. It's reactive. The federal government, what do you want them to do? Mental health, what do you want them to do? Tony, we talked to him. He told us no threat. Okay, well, just wait. Wait till he gets a gun. Well, he won't get a gun. How do you know? He might not pass the background check. This guy did.
And you're right.
My thing is, what do we want society to do when we are reactive and not proactive and there's no systems in place to stop things like this?
Let's how about we, first off, these legislators, Republican and Democrat, who either you got one side that wants to get rid of all guns, you got another side that wants to keep all guns. Nobody wants to meet in the middle where the greater majority of us are that says we want common sense legislation. Example. Early 2000s, like 2003, 2004, domestic violence was coming into play and everybody's trying to figure out what are we going to do with it, how are we going to handle it. Officers are sitting down at the bottom of the food chain working these calls. Where I mean, Chief, if I'm lying, Chief, you know, we would go to a call. That was just a verbal argument. But given investigating it and things to come out of the argument, we knew. I'm going to work a murder here. I am coming back here. I'm going to work a murder. Nothing we could do because there's no legislation on the books. Some of it is because of police unions who lobby with the NRA and all that. And I'm not going to have a whole big NRA debate. But a lot of it is politics and political BS. Now, I worked a call where a lady called us and her husband threatened to kill her. Had assaulted her. We were taking him to jail for the assault, family violence in Texas. Boom, you're going to jail automatically. You're gone. This guy had like 12 guns, and he said, I'm going to shoot her. So I confiscated every gun in the house. Why? Because I knew he's going to get out on bond. He's going to come back. I laid him out in the living room. Had crime scene come, take pictures of all these guns laid out that were confiscating. Of course, my report has make, model, serial number, blah, 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 blah. Everything's covered. We're not taking them from him. We are keeping them for safekeeping. I figure I'm doing everything right. Well, Stan was thinking ahead of the system. Because 4 days later, I get a note. Why did we take his guns? We said, you know, we get our reports back. We make our little typo corrections, whatever, because we dictate our reports. And I got a note from a detective. Why did we take his gun? Because the detective's ass was too lazy to worry about all them guns in that property room. All his property. I got to release all his property back. And why did we take it? If you can't understand that I put this guy in jail for assault, family violence, and he threatened to shoot his wife. It's in her statement. How would you think Stan took his gun? But you have to thought, with all this property, now I got to figure out how to release this property. That's the stuff that aggravates street officers.
I get it, Sam, but to my point, what you did was proactive. Because what did you just say? I know in 4 days he's going to get out, and you were being proactive, but the system is not set up that way to preserve and protect proactive positions. Now, had he killed her, with and if he had a shot of 12 times, one bullet from each gun, then that person would have had no problem putting those 12 guns in property lockup.
Tony?
Well,
go ahead, sir. No, no, I was just going to say to Tony's point real quick, and even though this isn't a gun. Example, I went to a call of an assault. I get there. I meet this lady across the street at a neighbor's house holding her head with two little kids. I think one was 5 and one was 3 around her. And I say, baby, move your hand. She moves her hand. I'm looking into this lady's head at her brain. Not hair. I am looking at her brain. She says he's over there at the house. We go across the street to the house. The guy is standing in the driveway. We arrest him. Come to find out he was arrested for family violence. The officers did everything by law they were supposed to do. Put him in jail. He got a bond. He got out. Went back to this house. She didn't even know he was out. He cut the phone lines so she couldn't make a landline call. Sat in the backyard, drank a six-pack of beer, crawled through the kitchen window, spoke to the kids, chased her out of the house with a hammer before he hit her in the head. I'm thinking, she's there and she's just my head. I'm there, I said, we're going to work this as a murder. It's not because Stan is smart. Something just snapped in me, said, work it as a murder. Because it's easier, Chief, if I'm wrong, correct me. It's easier to scale down than it is to scale up. They put her on a life flight. She died the next day.
Oh, God.
And you know what? When I met her, she had two things in her hand, Tony. Two things in her hand. She had that cordless house phone in one hand. In the other hand, she's clutching a worthless protective order when I met her.
Yeah.
Now, like I said, when we do this show, we're 100 on here. We're real. And because we want America, black or white or Republican, Democrat, the hell with all of that. We want people to know from us, from victims, and from people who have to deal with victims, and the cops become victims because they have to deal with it. The ER doctors become victims because they have to deal with it. And this is, we're playing with people's lives here. This is why these shootings continue to happen. This is why it never gets any better, because nobody wants to bring the raw emotion out. Everybody wants to look professional on camera, which is bullshit. You know,
I'm going to ask you this question, and Chief, I'm going to be quiet, but I want to hear you and Izzy, especially John. But I'm a pastor on this show, and I'm representing Christ everywhere I go. And I just want to say this, and I want all of you to answer this question for me, because I really feel nothing is going to change. We can have these shows, and I appreciate your emotion, Stan, and your experience, Chief, and the numbers you have, Izzy, and as far as your background, John, I appreciate everything you guys bring. But I'm just at the point where nothing's going to change. And like to your point, Stan, we got one side saying, and Janine, I'm looking at your post, and I'm not kind of like, you know, throwing you under the bus, but there are people who believe everyone should have guns. The NRA failed to put guns. If those people at that store and that massage parlor had guns, they might be alive. Other than that, says, no, take all the guns away. And, yeah, there will be no middle ground. I really believe, and Chief, correct me if I'm wrong, and this is me maybe being, I hate to say pastor and being realist in the same sentence. I think at the end of this show, at the end of today, at the end of this month, at the end of this year, nothing is going to change.
But, Tony, Janine brings up a good point on the Facebook. Chief, I'm going to get to you in 1 minute, Janine. I don't know. She brought up a good point. But I'll say to that, and I understand the philosophy and the concept and the principles of a good guy with a gun. I understand that. Now, here we go. And people, please don't take this out of the context of what I'm saying. And listen to what I'm saying. If you're white, that's true. But when you're black, with that concealed handgun, you could be dead. Period, point blank, in today's America. All you have to be is suspicious. Is that every certain circumstance? No. But I have to look at the fact where I can just strap on that concealed carry and go, because I may move a certain way if somebody sees a gun. Stan may not be perceived as a good guy, Second Amendment guy, with a gun, or it's a large guy. We see it in the calls. We see too many people die with just a cell phone, nothing in their hands. So, I mean, I'm speaking for Stan. I'm not speaking for black people. I'm just saying for Stan. Even when I was working as a police officer, we had a general order that said, you will carry your an off-duty weapon at all times when you're off-duty. That's good. It's in the general orders. Looks great, Chief. Looks really great. But what happens when Stan gets pulled over in Texas, which is not as post-racial as folks want to think it is? We're not talking Dallas, Houston, or Austin. We're talking about all those in-between places, just like here in Atlanta, that when Stan gets stopped, they're more focused on that gun than that 2 or 3 inch badge, if they can see it. And so for me, it's not as simple as I'm a good guy with a gun. I can carry it, and therefore be. We can look at the amount of black detectives in America that have been shot. Plainclothes detectives have been shot because responding officers saw them as a threat. That's a fact. So that's another part of this argument we have to talk about when we, you know, and I'm not disagreeing with Jenny, but when people say, you know, well, go take this class. My son, same name as me, my son builds guns. He's big in the guns. That's his thing. My constant warning to my son is, please don't carry that thing when you're riding around Belmead, Texas, because I don't want that car. Served in the military, very responsible, sound brother. For black people in America, and I don't think that white America, certainly the Second Amendment NRA people don't understand this. Maybe we haven't said it loud enough or said it clear enough. But for us to carry, you know, I'm quiet. I'm not in the militias. I'm not in anything. I'm just walking around with my concealed. It's not that easy for us. All it takes is for one person to say, I feel threatened. We can be dead. That is the truth. And I'm sorry to cut you off, Tony. Go ahead, Chief.
No, I you're right. I'll just say I'm pro-gun. I mean, I'm a police officer, and I've always got a weapon with me. You know, and it's in my general orders too that I'll carry my weapon on off duty. But I want to talk about systems, okay? So, Tony, I somewhat agree with you. This isn't a local control issue. This is a federal issue, right? And so the vote is no matter where you're at in this spectrum, no guns, everybody have guns, something in the middle. Doesn't matter. It's about the vote, about, you know, what decisions these people are going to make. You know, it's not a local control issue. So I think it's going to still be a long time coming, number one. Number two, I do want to talk about, we have a background process currently in this country for buying weapons. I know, and I can tell you, when Jim Devlin goes down to his local gun dealership, if there's something that I want to purchase, I go through a background, an ATF background process. I fill out paperwork and my name gets submitted and I get a yes or no. Just because I've got my badge and my credentials with me does automatically mean that I get to pick up a weapon. That's the first thing. I'm not knowledgeable enough to know how that process goes. And Izzy may be able to tell us a little info on it, but I don't know if you know about either. I don't know how that process takes place. But what I can tell you is that the systems that for a lot of the things that they're looking for to deny people the ability to have a gun, and I'm talking about mental health issues, felonies, I'm pretty sure they can find pretty easy from the federal level, but there's a lot of lower level things that I'm not exactly sure the ATF has access to. Now, and I'm going to give you two examples. One is, if there is a mental health issue, and I'm only going to use Texas, and if I'm wrong, somebody can correct me, but I don't think that I am. If I take an individual to the hospital as a result of a mental health crisis,
mm-hmm.
right,
mm-hmm.
and that person gets seen and released within 24 or 48 hours, and then they're sent back home, I'm pretty sure that visit isn't reported anywhere to
nope.
the federal government that the ATF would have access to, number one. Number two, up until 2018, the 87th legislature here in Texas, right? If you've been arrested for or convicted of family violence, any offense of family violence in the state of Texas, you're not allowed to have any kind of weapon. Any type of firearm, okay? So in that instance, that sounds great. There are two levels of family violence in Texas. There's a Class A assault family violence, which means you cause bodily injury, and there's some federal ones that are felony level one for serious bodily injury. But there's a Class C, right, equivalent to a citation to a traffic ticket, offense of family violence in Texas. Right? It's family violence threats, and it's family violence contact, which means whatever the contact was, it was offensive. It didn't hurt you, but it was offensive. And that's, you know, family members or people that live together in a household, that's what that falls under. That all is handled, that Class C is all handled at the municipal level of the city. Well, that's not reported to the state anywhere.
But see,
it doesn't go anywhere. Now, this last legislative session mandated that it gets reported as a criminal history violation to the state of Texas, but it took until 2018 or 2019, I'm sorry, to make that a law. So we could arrest somebody for family violence. You know, I won't say continuous because that's a different level, but two instances of family violence locally. We're the only ones that know about that.
But see,
so
you know,
that individual leaves my community and goes into Waco to mm-hmm. try to purchase a handgun or a weapon, nobody would know about
it. But you know what, Chief? But see, this is where I'm going to say the state is negligent and disconnected from the problem. Here's the reason why. You used the example of family violence. Everything you said is 1,000%. But you and I both know once we finish our offense report, which is what we're putting the person in jail, what they're going to get charged under locally, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We also have to fill in the circles on a separate form for family violence that goes to the state, correct? For their statistics. So my thing is this. All these shooters, the mental health defense always seems to come out. It always seems to come out. So then I would submit, then why aren't we doing, when we have to do these EDOs, emergency detention orders, people who are suicidal, and I'm not talking about somebody who's just momentarily depressed. I'm talking about people who are on medication to keep them functioning normal. Why on earth, if you've got somebody who has to wake up every morning and take a blue pill, green pill, whatever pill, just so they don't see Bugs Bunny, Daffy Duck, or to be able to see the world as most normal people do. That's relying upon that pill. Why would we give this person the ability to have a firearm knowing what is going to happen when they, A, hello, COVID and hard times, people can't afford their meds, and Chief, how many times have we gone on calls with people who just couldn't afford their meds?
All the time.
So if the state can produce a form, I'm talking state of Texas right now, if you can produce a separate form, a separate piece of paperwork for officers to fill out on every family violence case, whether it is, like the chief said, just a threat where the person felt threatened, where we're writing a ticket and the form actually takes us longer to fill out than the ticket, but if we have to do that for that, then why is it dealing with mental health cases? If the federal government wants to be in the loop, or the specific states want to be in the loop in reference to mental health and these knuckleheads that run around here shooting people, then why don't they make officers fill out these forms, fill in the circles like we have to do it. It's just another piece of paperwork for us. Fill it out so that the state now, their ass is on the hook because now you know this person is on, exhibiting this type of behavior. This is what they claim. You know, any additional notes, officer, what did they tell you they take? Because when we go to these calls, are you taking medication? Yes, what do you take? I take A, B, C, D, E. You know, you don't have to expose their HIPAA information, but America's got to knuckle down and stop passing this down to the local municipalities who are having to deal with these mass murder scenes because city legislators, some of them are full of BS. State legislators certainly are, and the federal government doesn't care. What's in the FBI and FEMA when you need federal help?
I think the last time that I filled out a form, there was a question to asking if I ever had any mental health evaluation. I mean, that was up to me, but I'm pretty sure that information you definitely can lie about. And again, I'm going to say I certainly believe there are people on both sides of this argument, pro-gun, no-gun, all agree there are some people that shouldn't have a gun, period, right? And so I think it needs to be determined if there's going to be this talk, if there's going to be a change, that there needs to be a determination on who is it specifically that should not own a firearm, and what are the reasonings, and what is the prescribed measure of why they shouldn't have it. Then they need to figure out, well, how do we figure out if these people have this? Because, again, I'm telling you, I'm not going to say that I'm an expert in the background process, because I will tell you that I am not. I don't even really know how all that takes place federally. I kind of wish Joe was here, because I think Joe knows how. But the issue is that I think you can lie on the form and you can get a weapon.
But it's safe to say, and I'm going to assume, but it's safe to say, good morning, Hattie, that everybody on this show is either on a watch list, being watched, or have been watched. They got the time and resources to worry about what Stan says, John says, Chief says, Tony, Joe, Isidoro, guests that have come on this show. They got all the resources to do that. But you can't find these nutcases out there.
But you know what, to your point, Stan, I want you to look at it like this. If you have a big software company, okay, and let's just suppose you got a company called T-North. I want to mention anybody's real name. T-North has a big software. Now, they're going to release this software in 2022. There are major holes in this software that will make it unreliable. But it'll cost too much money not to release this software and fix it. It'll be cheaper to release it and then reactively deal with the issues that come in one by one. What I'm looking at in this country, and forget about the rest of the world, but with America, I really believe, and all of you, especially John and Izzy, please, you know, shut me up and correct me if I'm wrong from what you guys have learned, but from what I believe in America has decided, the politicians, the bankers, the insurance companies, the people who are higher level law enforcement have made a very conscious decision. It's too expensive to be proactive and deal with the mental health issues and how we're going to make sure people can have access to guns if they're not mentally incompetent. And it's too big, it's too much money, it's too much work. What we'll do, we'll deal with these crime scenes after it's happened. Just like, again, I'm going to use my bridges. It's too expensive to go out and fix, retrograde every single bridge in the country that we know needs repairs. It's cheaper to just deal with the bridge when it collapses and then pay the lawsuits. It's much cheaper to do that because we've got tort reform and we can get that, you know, lawsuit lowered, whatever. But, I mean, me and Izzy are having discussions about numbers. But Izzy, you know, and then John, but first, Izzy, please correct me on the numbers about what you and I were talking about. And also, from your journalism, do you see this country just taking a backseat or a crab walk or reactive way of saying, it's too big to deal with it proactively. We'll just deal with case by case as they come.
I mean, it depends on what you're talking about. I mean, when you said earlier, like, you don't think anything's going to get fixed. I mean, I'm cynical, so I tend to lean that way, but I know that nothing's going to get fixed until we start having more complicated conversations, because it gets we start getting pigeonholed into debates, like the gun debate or the mental health debate, and they're both complex and valid. I personally haven't dove really deep into the gun rights debate. It's too politicized, at least for me, which is one of the things that I really like. I don't like how politicians take a mass shooting, run with it, and then use it to do whatever legislation they want to do, get more votes, get more money, and get reelected. I don't think they're doing it out of the goodness of their hearts. I will say that stricter gun laws that have been enacted in certain states, including Colorado, having really lowered gun deaths. Columbine happened during the 1994 to 2004 assault gun ban. And Chicago's got some of the strictest, everybody brings up Chicago, it's got some of the strictest gun laws in the country, and that still happens. Of course, it arguably happens because we're surrounded by a bunch of states that have much more lax gun laws. But again, it's more complex. But I think that people need to start having complicated conversations that are parallel to complicated issues. Like, we're talking about mental health, and the shooters and everything, it's very easy to label them as psychopaths or mentally ill, which I'm not saying they are or they're not. I'm sure there's some mental illness in there somewhere. But, I mean, the reality is that the severely mentally ill, which is like the minority population of the mentally ill population, something like 4% of the mentally ill population in the country are severely mentally ill. That's like schizophrenia and stuff like that. And then half of that are severely untreated mentally ill, and that's where you run into situations where you run into violent instances and stuff like that. However, ironically, even the seriously mentally ill and the undiagnosed mentally ill are more likely to be victims of violence than perpetrators of it. So I do think that when we're talking about mental illness, if we start having a complex conversation that deals with education, when you talk about Atlanta and what happened there, that guy was both mentally ill and poorly educated. He was indoctrinated by a church ideal that promoted the extreme views that he had. And he didn't have any other resources available, or he did, but he didn't know to look for any other resources available to him to kind of counteract some of the indoctrination he was receiving. I'm a firm believer that if we start talking about and trying to improve the education system in this country alone, we could probably solve a lot of these problems. Now, that's a long-term solution. There's no short-term solution to this problem. We're going to be dealing with this problem for as long as we choose to ignore the major problems. I will say that when it comes to the mental illness thing again, especially when you're dealing with untreated mental illness, like Chief said, there's no resources in place to deal with a lot of these people. So like Stan said, you can take them to a hospital. They might take them. But because of the way the laws exist and because of what we did in the past, it actually costs them more money to keep mentally ill people in bed, so they'll often just roll them out because they can't
afford it. Thank you.
Because if they have too many beds taken up by mentally ill patients, then they can lose access to Medicaid and Medicare because then they can be declared like a mental health facility. So there aren't any diversions. There aren't enough diversion places to take people. There aren't enough outpatient. Yeah, there's not enough resources to take these people to. And then to top it off, even if you take them to these places, there's no real laws to a certain degree that can force them to keep taking medication, keep going to treatment, and stuff like that. The laws are very, very tenuous, very sketchy when it comes to forcing people to take, to get, because you start running into the civil, like, personal freedoms and civil liberties and stuff.
We can't hear you, Izzy.
Let me do this real quick, because we got callers lined up, and I see a bunch of y'all on there. Press one of y'all, press one, but the rest, if you want to come on, press one, so that I know that you have a question. But let's go to the first caller, 254 area code 7093. Good morning.
Good morning, family. I actually wanted to speak about the systemic failure. That's really what I feel like all of this is. Can you hear me? Can everyone?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Hello?
Yeah, we can hear you. ahead.
Okay. All right. I don't know. But yeah, I want to speak about the systemic failure. I feel like there is a pattern conducted with repeated code breaches. During this time, it's kind of unfathomable to clarify or even justify the systemic racism the law enforcement, which as well as the police department, carries within to intentionally institutionalize specific communities. I'm talking about the social order and how it is systemized. We need to discuss the actions or even the distractions the judiciary system conducts to give perceptions, which are quite frankly sometimes deceptions, that are realistically separating the powerful dissipation of money, energy, and resources. There's a disconnection between the radical justice development because of the misuse of the Black Lives That Matter, which did not tragically just happen. It's been happening for many years. The boundaries that have been broken to expose the unbearable truth hold the very significance upon the designs of life. Now, whether we are speaking about the guns or not, police brutality and destruction to the victimhood of a Black male or female mentally is conducted with raised threats from the white privilege to demonize the enforcement and authorization of this catastrophic monopoly. That, in my mind, can be considered a hate crime. It's also the very thing that we kill for by any means necessary, if you look at the violence that's around. But to me, the roots of my foundation is my bloodline. They've experienced the traumatic events that have organized and been secluded to harm us for the elevation of our economics. You know what I mean? I wanted to express the love and respect that I have for my family and for this show, but I wanted to properly identify the issues evolving to resolute the problems that can be made. I'm sorry, that can be fixed man-made. God created the sun, the moon, and the stars. It's only right if we do everything in our willpower to create the spirit of joy by giving when we are able to receive. Now, it's the justice and equality. It's the difference between the right and wrong. We must not judge so we are not judged, but we must have discernment to decide what is actually best for oneself and the surrounding loved ones who are affected. I was listening to myself in the back of there. I'm sorry. I know we have the capabilities of making money, but it's also the quality of life that money associates with humans' lives, so they are used to abuse and manipulate the minds of one's weak, unconscious, desperate decision. And that's pretty much everything I needed to say. But I feel like as long as we have the power to correlate relations designed to reconstruct the Black power, we shall continue to live in our district and community and bring the appropriate relief to one another. And that's not to separate everyone, but it is to bring forth the truth. And yes, that is what I needed to say.
Now let me don't hang up, baby. Let me ask you a question, because you kind of hit on something, you know, that I want to kind of tie to, and then, you know, you're here for a while. This is not like that mainstream media, you look at where they hang up on you and say, thanks for calling, you're here. You're stuck now. You know, you kind of hit on stuff, you know, to me, and this is Stan's opinion, as a black man. John and Al, I want to bring you in on this, John. You know, I look at corporate America, not white America or black America, but corporate America. America's mm-hmm. about money. That's why it created racism, to make money. Mm-hmm. And when I hear you talking, and I look at all of a sudden we have all this explosion of racial tension, which has always been there, but it's out the closet now. And you know mm-hmm. why? Because America is afraid of the brownie. I look at what just happened in Atlanta or in Georgia
mm-hmm.
with voter rights. And it's like the disenfranchisement. It's like, we got to keep these brown and yellow and tan people, we got to keep them down here. We can't let things develop. So when you look at the potential to make money, to establish oneself, as John is doing now, to move the agenda forward, somehow the the concept of equality to some people means I've got to now give up something to be equal. And so when I look at where people that are different are portrayed as a threat, we're seeing a lot of this stuff. And we can go back to all these school shootings or church shootings or mall shootings, and we look at how that lone individual thought. They're not a representation of their whole race, but that one person, who was feeding them? And we go back to media, and we go back to politicians, and in some instances, we go back to their local preachers who fed this virus. What's your thoughts on that?
Who are you asking?
No, the caller.
Oh. I'm sorry. What was the last part? I'm sorry. I'm all over the place.
What's your thoughts on the motivation that we see come out? We've seen an uptick. Some people will call it an uptick. Some of us would say it just come out of the closet. But we see all this tension right now in America, which to me is because some folks feel they're losing their space. They're losing their position. They're losing their importance. They're losing their power. Because other people are just going to practice that which the Constitution has guaranteed them the right to do.
Right.
So what's your thoughts? How do we fix this? What would you say?
I'm not too sure about how to fix it. I just know about the truth and what's going on, and I feel like there's not a lot of being shown. We talk about it, but it's not really a lot. That's really more so the focus. I mean, there's motivation behind it, and it's not to separate, but I feel like you must talk about the truth before you move forward to anything else, the progression.
Absolutely. Look here, baby, I want you to stay on because we're going to move on. You know, if you got to move around, mute your own phone. I'm going to leave your mic open. But, you know, you can chime in. You're part of the show now. You're here. That's what I tell the callers. When you call, you're here. You're part of everything that's going on. Izzy, what's up, bro?
No problem.
I see that mind working.
I'm in my eyes always working. I'm just thinking about a dozen different things. But what are we talking about trying to fix right now?
Yeah, that was my question, too. What are we trying to fix? I mean, because there's a lot to unpack there. And I get it about restructuring the black structure. And, you know, you have to do that in cooperation with other nationalities because, to your point, Sam, race has been invented. That is the biggest scam besides, you know, Bernie Madoff and the MLM and all type of mid-level marketing pyramid schemes. But there is no such thing as race, and that's what I was bringing up on that last show we did. You know, that there's only one race. And I know this may sound very naive to people, but when you really look at human beings, there's only one race, the human race, with different nationalities. And so when you look at this country, there is so much money to be made with division. I mean, and that's one thing that you can look at from the insurance, pharmaceutical, medical, banking, you know, political. They have to keep you divided to really give you the ideology that you're different. Now, John, I got to lean towards you, John, but please, you know, come in with you seeing this country from a perspective that none of us have had, you know, being with your background, and you can bring that up. But how would you define what that call was saying as far as rebuilding or restructuring? How would you look at it?
First and foremost, to just rebuild the black community without including other communities is a waste because I think we're talking about a nation of misinformed people. A true history study will show that slavery in America was not based on race. It was based on economics. And race was used as justification of certain behaviors. So what you have is a bunch of miseducated black people, a bunch of miseducated whites and everybody else in between. But the thing that I really wanted to touch on as something that Chief Devlin was talking about, the thing that really caught me is that
when someone is taking medication, right, and they're a gun owner, they're a known gun owner, right, how come when they're no longer, see, because the pharmacy has a way of knowing whether or not someone is not refilling their prescription. So when they're not refilling the prescription, shouldn't there be a data alert if that person is a gun owner? The law enforcement should be able to know immediately that the prescription is no longer taking the medication, be based on the fact that they're not refilling their medication. And that's something that I wanted to talk to Stan and Chief Devlin about. What would be their idea of creating a database and the pharmacy or caretakers who know that this individual is no longer on any medication should be responsible to let those local officers know that I have this at 1B, he's a gun owner, and he's no longer taking his medication. Now, is that one of the most important questions here? That was, what are we facing? Because this system,
not meet myself.
Through the way they created the system to work, to keep us all miseducated, all fighting, talking about race. Meanwhile, corporate America continues to feed off the ignorance of those of us who fight against each other. Now, I don't know what side used to carry a gun illegally, right? And I know the power that the gun gives a person. So it's not the gun, it's the individual.
Hey.
It's the education.
No, ain't it? You want me to move right this second?
Educated on being gun owners. And I'm not just talking in mere, because even a cop would tell you he feels safe running into somewhere when he got his badge and gun on. That gun gives you a sense of power. And you have to be able to talk to people and educate them, because I'm telling you, man, you know, I've been places where it could have been like five of us, and it could have been like 30 dudes from another hood that we were having problems with. But I had that thing on me, and, yo, we good. We good. But if anybody was using common sense to say, yo, man, let's get out of here, man. Boom, defeated, because time was to be here. But when you got that thing on you, it builds up something in you. Actually, you really hoping something pop off.
You know, John, you know, what you said, bro, is so true, because I have, Chief, in your career, you've seen them. But I know, had they not had that gun or that badge, they'd have got that ass whipped for real. And how many times have we heard folks say, take off that badge and put down that gun, take off that belt? Now, some of that might be wolf tickets, but some of that is real. Why? Because of the attitude oftentimes that comes out. That gun is a piece of metal. You can pull it. When we went to the academy, they told us this. They said, all of y'all are going to have a nightmare when you get out on the street. Most officers have this same nightmare, to where they pull their gun in their dream. And they pull the trigger, and either the bullet comes to the edge of the barrel and trickles out and falls, or that boom flag that you see a roadrunner. That's actually a real psychological thing, that we depend so much on that gun that we're given that the one time you need it, you'll pull that trigger, and that bullet will just trickle out and fall to the ground, or that flag will come out. And a psychiatrist actually told us that in the academy. And it really, for us, it puts you in reality. We've all been on the range, Chief. You've been there. We load up the ammunition, you know, 15 rounds. You pull the trigger, boom, 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 click. Jack that round out, go to the next one. Boom. So everything that's made for that gun doesn't always work. That's in your mind. But that safety thing, and what you said, John, from your perspective, of just being in the street is no different than some, I can't say a lot, than some officers who are walking around the street right now. They got that thing with them. They got two things. They got that badge too. But and that's real talk, bro.
I'm going to ask Tony something. Because we're talking about race and, you know, these students are not always motivated by race and color or whatever. There is a religious stupidity out here. You're a pastor, so this is, should be dear to you. How is it in Judaism, Islam, Buddhism, whatever the religion, Christianity, it's about thou should not kill, thou should not do that, thou should. So if you're a Muslim and you're striving for righteousness, you're a Christian, you're striving for righteousness, the only thing that separates us is titles. But there's Muslims that are going, you know, bad Muslims that were going to do bad things, and there's Christians that were going to do bad things, Jews who were going to do bad things. As a religious man, how would that make you feel? I want to put the pressure on you right now and ask how that makes you feel. And before you say something, I want to say to any religious person that's listening, you have to get out of the idea, because your book promotes that if you don't accept my way of believing, you're not going to heaven. My mother never did drugs. She never committed a crime. She fed the homeless all the way to the day she passed away. She never murdered anyone. I can never accept the fact because she didn't become a Muslim. Any Muslim imam or sheikh tells me that my mother's not going to paradise. But because I say I confess certain things, I'm going to paradise, and my hands are real dirty. And as a pastor, I want to put pressure on you to address the people from a religious point.
Well, thank you, John. I appreciate you putting me out there. But in all seriousness, it bothers me, because just like you've got, there are different people politically who are spreading misinformation and disinformation. I can only speak and be an apologist for Christianity. And, you know, when you talk about, and eloquent as you did, thou shalt not, from a religious perspective, and I'm going to get to this Atlanta shooter in a minute, there are people who don't understand true Christianity and how Jesus has made it very simple to be a Christian. The Bible says that his yoke is light, his burden easy, even a fool, you know, couldn't err as far as following the gospel. And when you look at the Bible, made up of the Old Testament, the New Testament, what has been misrepresented and misunderstood has been the Old Testament was thou shalt not, thou shalt not. Number one, it was written for the Jews. It was a law and a covenant that God made with the Jews. So if there's anybody out there, including me, who is not Jewish, the Old Testament was not written for you. That doesn't mean that God didn't have Gentiles like me in mind. It just meant that our time would come in the New Testament. The Old Testament dealt with what man could not do, should not do, better not do, in order to be holy. But God did that on purpose because he wanted to bring man to the end of himself, realizing, I can't do this. There are 633 laws in the Old Testament. And God said, if you break one, you broke them all. So you got to keep them all. Nobody could do it. They tried their best, and God knew that. He said, that's why I want you to fall on my son, because now the New Testament, right now, 2021, is not what you do that makes you holy. It's what Jesus does. And if you have your faith in Jesus based on Christianity and the Christian Bible, then that's where you live, and that's where your hope and faith is. You've got somebody out here who gets a gun, who has been misunderstood, and they've been misrepresented, and they've gone to part of a religious sect, like Izzy was stating, that this was a very strict type of legalistic church and denomination and teaching. And this person did what people who are confused about the gospel of Jesus really does. They blame somebody else. I must kill and end the tempter instead of dealing with the temptation deals with you. And as a pastor, it does bother me because you don't just see this with people who have a gun. This is people that have a pulpit. You know, part of our show today, before it got late, we're going to be on this movement from this person that's doing this book called Preachers and Sneakers, and how, you know, preachers are getting so much money and they're wearing certain gym shoes and private planes. You don't have to misrepresent the Bible just with a gun. You can do it with a pulpit too. And, you know, I won't get to that right now. But to answer your point, John, and to really kind of further the discussion on this, and this is where I love having Izzy to bounce things off of, and people think that, hey, you know, Tony is a pastor and Izzy is an atheist or whatever, and I know they don't get along. And it's like, this brother and I talk so much, and we really do get along, and that's the way it's supposed to be. You know, that's what we don't have in this country is the dialogue, you know, going back and forth. So it's a lack of information, John. It's a lack of too many people taking one verse out of context and not understanding it. I hope that makes sense, John. And I would love to do a whole show like that because people really don't understand. When God made heaven, he's not trying to keep people out of it. So, you see, I'll never say this person's going to hell, they're going to heaven. You know, they were born this way, but they believe this way. We are not there the final millisecond before that person dies. And it's up to Christ to go to them and say, do you believe now? All your life you didn't believe me, but do you look at me? Do you believe now? If they just say yes, boom. The thief, if they follow the Bible, the thief who was crucified next to Christ, didn't get baptized, didn't speak in tongues, didn't come to the altar call. He just told over Jesus one thing, remember me when you enter your paradise. And Jesus stopped dying and said, I tell you this, you will be with me in paradise. God is not trying to keep people out of heaven. You know, so, but people get it all confused. Does that answer your question the best way I can for right now with the time we have, John?
I just wanted to put something out there for the people. And basically, like, you know, a lot of these students are religious-based, and it's from ignorance because if you have people that are striving for righteousness, and even, and not to debate you, but I question, because I've been told that, you know, my brother's a pastor. My brother said, well, we're no longer under the law. We're under grace. And I said, well, I have Jesus on word when he said, but don't think I came to destroy the law.
But to fulfill it.
Mm-hmm. So if he didn't come to destroy the law, then the law is still in existence. So that's just my understanding of what he said. The law still exists where we have to be able to honor thy neighbor, respect thy neighbor, love thy neighbor. We still have to be able to, thou shalt not kill. All these things are relevant, and if we all strive for the same thing, we have to be able to teach within our studies about this unity, because I have more in common with a Christian or a Jew that is striving for righteousness than I have with a Muslim looking to blow up somebody's building.
Hallelujah.
You know, let me chime this in real quick because, you know, Janine Arnold, who was on the show, Janine, she's really putting out some stuff on Facebook, and God bless people who support and chime in. You know, she said, we're not here for ourselves, to serve ourselves, but we're here to serve God, whatever God you want it to be, and our fellow man. And that last part she said, our fellow man or woman. That really, to me, says a lot. Let me go real quick to a caller, 404 area code 2002. What's up?
What's going on, Stan? How you guys
Big
doing today?
All right, bro. What's going on?
Give me a second here. I got to walk away. I'm painting, so let me get where I can, all this echo won't. interfere.
You sound good, Kanye Smith and Bill, buddy.
Hey, I'm doing it all, man. Two things I wanted to say. That young lady that came on a few ago, I agree with her 150%. I do agree
she's
with her. She's right. Huh?
No, she's the mom.
Oh, yeah. I agree with her 150%. But my perspective is a little bit different. I mean, I can still agree, but I can add extra. Black Lives Matter, I'm not even a part of Black Lives Matter. But I do believe that black lives do matter. So now when we're talking about mental health issues and we're talking about now Asian rights, we're talking about transgender rights, we're talking about all these different things now, and everybody's supporting it. What that just did, that took the agenda of Black Lives Mattering and actually put it on the back burner. That's just my opinion. They put it on the back burner, so now we can worry about the Asians. We can worry about the LGBTQ. We can worry about everything else. And we have a full head of steam going now. Things were actually changing for us. But I kind of got taken aback when our president, Joe Biden, got on TV and denounced it and said Asian lives matter. But you can't get any of these people to acknowledge that black lives matter. You can't get these people to acknowledge anything else. They've killed transgender people. They've murdered them. They've done mass murders in a gay club. They've done mass murders in a church. They've done mass murders everywhere. But it seems to me sometimes that the message that I matter to doesn't get through to everybody. That's the way I feel about it. I mean, that maybe that's not the way it's actually going, but sometimes I kind of feel that way. No?
You know, Travis, if I can interject, and I'm going to let you finish. In the interest of full transparency, you and I had a conversation this week.
Yes.
And we oftentimes talk about these type of things. And I said to you, to which you replied to me, you know, you must have been reading my mind. But I said, you know, when the situation happened here in Atlanta, it was a tragedy. It was bad. I'm not saying Asian lives don't matter. But I am saying this, that black people, our spirit has always been to help everybody.
Yes.
So much to that we have oftentimes put our situation on the back burner to carry somebody else's mantle or support their mantle.
Yes.
And not fulfill our mantle. You know, LGBTQ, you know, rights, I'm not against that. You know, I'm supporting people should have human rights. It's about human rights at the end of the day. But when I roll back the history of human rights for us, it's 400 years.
Thank you.
And we're still trying to get things. We, you know, I mean, I look at Asian Lives Matter, and I'm knocking it. God bless them, because, you know, I lived in Korea, lived in Japan.
Yep.
But I'm saying you went leaps and bounds above what we had to have people die for to even get the recognition from our politicians here. I got to say that. Because that's real, and I'm going to be real. I'm not going to tell you one thing in private and then on the show, you know, worry about what, you know, I think that the media has jumped on that and pushed it from an Asian rights matter perspective, which, yes, there is Asian hate that's going on, but there's black hate that's been going on for 400 years in this country that nobody wants to talk about. Let's just get real about it.
Thank you.
I'm not diminishing the Asian cause. But I, as a black man, I'm going to say, I'm sorry, me first, for a change. It seems to be me first in the legal system. It seems to be me first in the criminal justice system. So me first for a change. And pardon me if I get selfish. But at one point, you got to be concerned with that when it comes to your mortality and you being on this earth and your survival. You have to be concerned with you, your family, and those who look like you first. Then it transcends out to everybody else. You're not excluding anyone, but you're saying, you know what, I got to get the beams up in my house first before I can invite you in.
Mr. Sam, let me ask you a question. Let me ask you one question. This, and I'm not knocking you or the caller, but I've got to ask this question. How many Asians have you seen come on TV and say, I don't believe in Asian Lives Matter. How many Asians have you seen saying, no, it's really not that bad. We haven't been going through this like some people are saying. I haven't seen that yet. And here's my point. Now, because of the Asian hate, the Asian killing that's going on right now, I don't feel it's diminishing the Black Lives Matter movement, but I am a black man. I am a part of a nationality that has a history of having other black men and women come against black men and women who are up and standing up for the cause. We can all cry at Dr. King right now, but you know what I know, how many black people were not down with him.
That's right.
To the caller's own credit, and Travis, I don't know you personally, and I'm not demeaning what you're saying, but, you know, the first thing he said was, I'm not a part of the whole Black Lives Matter movement. And that's part of the, what I would say, confusion of a national scale. If you're the media, you're like, well, what do you want us to do? Half of y'all want reparations, the other half does not. Half of you are saying that there is a black problem in this country, the other half are saying that...
But Tony, if I can for a second, I think that the media has used the Black Lives Matter movement to overwrite all of the black struggle in America, particularly the civil rights struggle. Because if you go, and as Joe has said, if you go read their manifesto, I stand to personally does not agree with the Black Lives Matter movement manifesto as rape. I absolutely do not agree with it.
I agree with it.
But I agree with Black Lives Matter. I'm not knocking
yes.
anybody else's movement, but I am saying that we typically jump on everybody else's bandwagon with full support for their cause. But when it comes down to our cause, we don't see the same participation.
Even if a person says, I'm for Black Lives mm-hmm. Matter, you know, but I'm not for this entire, you know, because I read this on one on their website and whatever. I get that. But the thing is, two things. And I'm not saying I'm for one or against one, but just like, look, if a person is against the whole Black Lives Matter, you know, hashtag, and they went to their website and all these women have yada, 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 okay, create another one. Have another hashtag. And I'm not directing this towards you, but I'm directing towards Black America. What can Black America come up with where all of Black America is going to be in agreement, just like the Asians are right now? Do you know that it popped his head up? What? And if you get better at this journalism than I am. Well, the last year, the Irish got together and said, you know what? We got on to all this black slavery and Black Lives Matter. The Irish were the first slaves in this country. There were 30,000 Irish sold into slavery, and they were done worse than the Africans. All of them jumped on that. I didn't hear not one Irish come out and say, wait a minute.
But Tony.
Wait. Until you do your research and find out, the Irish in America were indentured servants,
yes.
which is not
yes.
slavery. But see, they didn't. I had no Irish come out again. I heard no Irish come out and say, no, that's wrong. As black people, we have to find some type of movement.
Brother, I agree with you. And let me say this, because we're in agreement here, and I'm going to say something that's going to be hard for a lot of black folks to swallow. Some of them going to get mad. That's okay. You know where to find me, but I'm going to say this. So we down with the brother, hey, brother, hey, brother, but we're killing each other. I'm going to go ahead and say this. You know, if you put, and I said this the other day, Tony, you and I talked. And I said this to you on a phone call, and I'm going to let everybody out in the world hear it, just to show transparency. When you put a bunch of white folks in a room, they don't subdivide into I'm whiter than you are. You're not white enough. When you put, how often times you hear, they look at me, that light-skinned, he one of them light-skinned ones. We subdivide. Even though Stan faces the same circumstances that you face, we subdivide with self-defeats. And I'm not building a black power base right now. We're just airing dirty laundry. That's what we do on this
yes.
show. Let's call it out. Now, for everybody who says and doesn't have a problem, when I'm calling out white folks, they're clapping, Facebook likes. But then when you start calling out the in-house thing, see, let's just get real about it. We can't subdivide and have, even when, you know, this is a light-skinned guy, this guy's brown, this guy's dark, or woman, or whatever, but you don't see them as black right now. But now instead gets shot, then I'm black. Because I'm convinced for the movement. Let me go down, because we got a bunch
can
of callers. I want to make sure I get them all in.
Can I say something, Stan?
Yeah, go ahead, Travis.
Real quick, two things. I said I was not a member of Black Lives, but I do agree with them. That doesn't mean I'm deviating away from anything. I do believe in what they're doing. I'm not a member. Okay, that was the point I was trying to make, because I didn't want to bring up a Black Lives Matter platform on your show today. I wasn't trying to do that. So I wanted to just say that. Secondly, real quick, Stan, I've enjoyed your show. I've listened to your show every Saturday. I'll put you on mute, vacuum the floor, clean the house, do whatever I got to do. Today I'm painting. And I love listening to your show. We talked earlier this week, and you said to me that you were kind of getting a little frustrated with stuff. And I'm going to tell you point blank, I believe in Stan Mason. I believe in his platform. I believe in what he's doing. I would never sit here and tell anybody Stan Mason's an idiot, he's a troublemaker, all he's doing. I won't do that, because it's not true. I'm going to tell the truth. So as far as what he said earlier about what we do going to other platforms, there's a nice little religious thing that we say all the time. Sweep around your own back porch before you start sweeping around anybody else's. We got to get our act together. We got to get our act together today, right now. We have to get ours together. And then I don't mind going out and helping other people. I don't mind marching for Asian lives. But at that protest they had in Atlanta, I saw black people marching, white people marching. I saw Asians marching, and I saw transgender people holding up signs. Once again, it's always a different movement instead of the one that actually really matters at this moment. That's what I'm trying to get across to everybody. Stan, I love your show. Love you, brother. Keep up the good work. All you guys on the panel, love you guys. Keep up the good work. That's all I have to say, and I'm going to get back to my painting.
Appreciate you, bro. Let me grab one more caller. 323 area code. 9666. Oh, Lord, this might be Satan coming on here.
That's L.A. That's the L.A. area code.
That might be Satan.
Long time no see, Stan Mason.
Hey, what's going on?
This is Rob from the Round Table.
What's up, Rob?
I've been listening. Everything's good. I feel glad to be able to call into your show, you know, just to piggyback on what Travis said a little bit earlier, you know, like saying you're a great man, you're like, just for being who you are, the fact that you have a platform is like frosting. And so I do have a few thoughts I wanted to get out, like, because I've been, my thing is in terms of the shooting, the Colorado shooting in relation to Black Lives Matter is, I have a little bit of an issue with the belief system that, and not just Colorado shooting, also the Atlanta shooting, is that I'm very much a supporter of, I would consider myself a progressive, and I don't think that it's just about Black Lives Matter. I also believe it's about LGBTQ plus Lives Matter, Asian Lives Matter, you know what I mean, Latino/Indigenous personnel Lives Matter. And everybody has their own movement for a reason, and it's called diversity for a reason. We're supposed to work off of each other, and we're supposed to learn from each other's mistakes and each other's progresses and whatnot. Now, what I'm saying for Black Lives Matter is I get the feeling that there's a level of hypocrisy going on at the top in our government, and I feel like it's going to trickle down to the police departments if it hasn't already at some point. When you think about it, because what do we think of when we think of Black Lives Matter? Well, thanks to people like, you know, our last president, you know, we have this, there's now this equation with Black Lives Matter and Antifa and terrorism and anarchy and whatnot. And so what I'm trying to really get to is, at what point is there going to be an administration that's not going to do what Biden did and blow off Black Lives Matter when he gets inaugurated, but then is heralded and saying, no, Asian Lives Matter, we need to do things for the Asian community. See, I have a problem with people who only want to enforce part of the law. Stan Mason, you know me, like I've never tried to be, you know, an upstart, you know, in terms of in terms of my rhetoric, I'm just being honest about my approach. I have a hard time every time I have to, you know, I have to bump into a cop that just because of how I look. There's a certain type of language I have to hear, or there's a certain type of perspective it has to come out as. But I don't see that in other communities being, and I don't see other minority communities being affected at the same rate as people that look like me. And so what I'm getting out is, yes, other lives do matter. Asian lives, LGBT plus lives matter, you know, and the like. But, I mean, we do need to give black lives the not just the day for a platform in terms of how do they matter economically and politically, you know, but how can we make them matter more? Because I love how we'll defend to the end the rights for the Asians to have businesses, the rights for the Jews to have businesses, the rights for the Hispanic community to have businesses. But with black businesses, it's like, oh, well, they sell weed. So, you know, like they don't really know how to you know, move money. They don't know how to construct a formal economy. And that's just not true. That's just never been the case with black people. Our history goes back economically before the European conquistadors. So, I mean, the richest man in the world is black. So it doesn't make sense how we keep getting passed over in 2021 as this, well, can we get, because I heard it earlier, well, black people need to get on the same page. If we know anything about black history, we've never been on the same page about anything, and that's not stopped us from advancing. So what it comes down to, in my opinion, I don't have the answers, but I do believe that it does not matter if we are on the same page or not. All that matters is, are we willing to unite under the fact that we are one ethnicity? If you don't want to use the word race, fine, but we all originate from Africa to some extent, and we're willing to embrace that, and we're trying to build that platform internally instead of say, well, the Irish had slaves too, so what are we complaining about? You know, we have to get back on that one voice mentality, but we have to also understand that we as a people, black people, are not a monolith either. We have multiple different voices that are all trying to interlink. And when it comes to policy, where we have the disconnect is, yes, we can see the LGBTQ community, you know, lobby the federal government. We can see the Asian community lobby the federal government. Right. But there's a disconnect with how we do it. And that's where I have the problem.
All right, bro. Appreciate you. Let me grab another caller, 314 area code 4600. Good morning.
You know, I keep hearing these narratives that left blacks are a separate nation in the United States, and they all the same. That's, unfortunately, for those who think that way, that's just not true. You look on the African continent, slavery was not nothing new. Sacrifice and all those things that people, cannibalism that people seem to put a negative view to, was not anything new. And one of the reasons, maybe since we talk about DNA and syndromes, well, maybe it's because that all that was brought here came from different ethnic groups that, in essence, fought and warred against each other. So maybe that DNA is still prevalent that caused the behavior of not wanting to get along. You know, black businesses, there's records of black businesses, and a lady done a good book on it, called Black Entrepreneurs from 1600 through 1865. You read some of the accounts going back in the 15th century, the merchants made mention that blacks would not support their stores. That's because they're different. Maybe they don't want to. And you think about the Asians, go into China in those merchant areas where Nigerians have set up shop. During the pandemic, Asians were telling Nigerians to go back to Africa because you brought the disease. They won't let them further on into the countryside. They keep them basically cordoned in one area, one town.
Mm-hmm.
So then also look at the L.A. race riots. It was blacks that were burning up Asian stores, Koreans.
Yeah, but
pardon
it was
me?
Also some freaking, no, bro, we're at the 15-minute mark, so, you know, I got
to
be kind
of. Oh, I'm sorry. Well, I didn't want to take up no more time than I was supposed to.
No, bro,
but I write the rest in your chat, in your Facebook chat.
But, you know, but I will also say that from a racial perspective between blacks and Koreans here in America, there has been some racial tension.
Oh, yes, it sure has. A lot of it had to do around the issue of economics.
There's going to always be racial tension in this country because you have people who have decided not to get along. I mean, and again, this may not sound good to a lot of people. And again, I'm a pastor, and I believe I'm a realist.
Real quick, Tony, because we got to get through this.
Black lives don't matter to a amount of people in America. I'm not going to say everybody, but what I found interesting was when the Black Lives Matter movement started going, you heard All Lives Matter, Blue Lives Matter.
Mm-hmm.
I want to ask you, how many times did you hear White Lives Matter, All Lives Matter, Blue Lives Matter, when Asians were protesting and saying Asian Lives Matter? I haven't heard All Lives Matter or Blue Lives Matter since we stopped hearing about Black Lives Matter. So, again, there are, and I believe that I'm an optimist, there is a small amount of people in this country who feel black lives don't matter. And that is why you're going to see it on the media, you're going to see it in law enforcement, banking, you're going to see it in politics, you're going to see it in financial institutions. Black people in this country were not set up to strive. That's why you're going to have to do it individually. For every, God forbid, Trayvon Martin out there, you're going to have somebody on that going to come out and excel and do something. We're not all going to be able to dunk a basketball or score a touchdown or, you know, sink a putt. But the same thing applies. It's going to have to be individual. If you're black in this country, whether you're light or dark, it's going to be up to you to follow the rules that you have in your own life to succeed in this country because the rules have been set against you. But you
can't. Real quick, Tony. All right, let me go down through the callers real quick before I can get to the co-host for final comment. Go back up 254 area code 7093. Sister Soja up in the house. Appreciate you hanging with us. I'm gonna call you when we get done with the show. So you gonna see another 254 area code. And I know you're thinking Atlanta. What's up? Give us about 30 seconds. Give us your final thoughts. How do we fix this? What should we do? What's up?
Well, thank you for listening to me today. But it was an uneasy, kind of unapologetic discussion. But I wanted to at least establish my voice to have a perspective of my reality. As we speak about the Black Lives That Matter, we're speaking about the Black America. And it's constructed with the Black lives. It's our contract to build. It's our lives. It's our future. We need to unite on our journey of life together as one. So what can we say that we did to fight to survive this hellhole, or for me, speaking from Waco, the black hole. So I appreciate today. I've learned a lot. I'm listening. I'm still learning. I love to talk more, and I'd love to learn more because clearly I need to. But I appreciate everything. It was nice. This is something I watch and I tune into as much as I can, and it's something I'm going to continue to be involved in for sure. So
I appreciate you.
Did
I ever meet you when I was there?
No, but I'm pretty sure you know my family.
Yeah, we'll talk out there. I probably do. I appreciate you. Let me see. Let me go down. Big Travis, come on, bro. About 30 seconds.
Well, I mean, what I'd like to do is just say one thing real quick, and then just rest of my time, somebody else can go with it. We do have a problem, a systemic problem, not just with our counterparts, it's with us too. We can't agree on anything, and I agree with what the gentleman said about we can't ever get together. I agree with him 100%, and that's going to be part of the healing process, and it's sort of like a 12-step program. You got to admit you got a drug problem before we can do anything about it. And if you can admit that racism does exist in this country, white supremacy exists, then I think that's a step in the right direction, and we will be able to start a dialogue, and we can get things done. That's it for me, Stan. Thank you.
All right, bro. Appreciate you. 323 area code 9666.
All right, all right. I just want to say I appreciate you again, Stan. And, yes, black lives do matter, but I believe that we need to take the discussion further in the direction of black economics. And we need to be willing to say, if black lives matter, how are we going to build black businesses and not just black communities, but all over the county, if necessary, of any major city and any big state that has a lot of business and whatnot. I'm kind of rattling a little bit, but I appreciate you, Stan. And, you know, just want to end it all again saying Black Lives Matter.
Appreciate you, brother. Pianchi, 314. Come on, bro.
You ever been to a Nigerian American beauty contest, Ghanaian American beauty contest, Ethiopian American beauty contest? One thing they have in common, their skin is not white, but they don't go in with the African American beauty contest. Why is that? Because they don't want to, and they don't consider themselves the same. Thank you.
Appreciate you, brother, and thanks for always being a faithful caller. We're going to go down through the co-hosts now. Izzy, come on, unravel it, brother. You got about a minute.
You know, I don't even know what I'm unraveling anymore. I don't think we're going to solve the problem of racism in this country if we're not talking about things like education and health care and, you know, living wages, stuff like that. They're all connected. I will say one thing, and the caller, the young lady who was on, kind of brought that up in terms of the discrepancies between how these things are presented. And we talked, actually, a bunch of people brought this up. One of the facts that I ran into, in both of these two shootings, everybody's talking about, like Sam even said at the very beginning, like, oh, we're getting back to, like, what America is, you know? We're acting like there was this big hiatus for the last year. And these mass shootings are the first two dramatic things to happen that are getting us back on to the normal. But the reality of the matter is that last year there were 600 mass shootings.
Mm-hmm.
And this year, there's just in the beginning of this year, there's been 100. There's a biased level of reporting in terms of statistics and how these things are laid out. The reason we haven't been talking about the 600 mass shootings that happened last year is because they happened primarily in black, brown, and marginalized communities, for the most part. And there's two different, the major media organizations kind of, there's like two different databases that you can go to find these statistics. And one of them has a very narrow margin for what they identify as a mass shooting. It has to happen in a main public place. It has to be at random. And it misses some things. It doesn't take into account a lot of things. And the reality is that these shootings are happening all the time. And when they make the big news and we talk about these big instances, they are terrible, they are dramatic. But when we focus on these, like Atlanta, like Colorado, we're detracting from the reality that these are happening all the time in marginalized communities around the country. And they're not reporting on them. It serves a narrative. It serves a financial goal. It gets more hits. It gets more likes. It gets all the other stuff. So it's just one of those facts that shows that there is a strange bias in terms of how these conversations are represented in the media and how they're talked about everywhere else. And it does seem to be to the detriment of people of color a lot of the time.
All right, Dejan.
Yeah, thank you. Once again, another great show, as anticipated. My take on it is, I don't know how we got way over to race, but
it's what will he do?
Great job. We're on the time. Come on, John.
And so, man, it ends up turning about being race, and I think that we are starting to allow a lot of things to make it about race and get away from the true essence of what's wrong, and that we are living in a sick nation. The bottom line is, if you look at the history here, and people who are in poverty, it's kind of difficult. Drug addiction, families, it's kind of difficult for a kid to grow up with a parent in prison and another parent on drugs and not think that they're going to have some type of mental issues. So we have to remain, as hosts of the show, we must remain focused on the issue at hand. Because drugs don't discriminate, COVID-19 don't discriminate, bullets don't discriminate. So we have to remain focused. There are whites that are dying. There are blacks that are dying, Asians that are dying at the hands of stupidity, ignorance. And that's at the heart of it all for me. Black Lives Matter when black lives begin to matter to black folks. The reason why Asians are able to
15 seconds, John.
Behind it is because black folks are not united. We're black when there's an incident. And then from there we go back to calling ourselves the N-word and disrespecting our women and so on. Asians are protectors of their race. Everybody else protect their race. So Black Lives Matter is going to really be effective when it's really mattered to us. That's it.
Appreciate you, brother. Reverend T, 1 minute.
Okay, 1 minute. I want to first get back to a point that John had brought up, and I wanted to just define this, and I won't be a good pastor if I don't say this. But when he had the question about Jesus said that he didn't come to abolish the law, he came to fulfill it, and what that meant in Christianity, and I want everyone to hear me well, in Christianity, what Jesus was saying is, you are no longer in the New Testament held liable to conduct yourselves and you know, adhere to 633 laws. Jesus is saying, come into me, I have fulfilled it. So if you're in my ship, it's like you have fulfilled it. So that's what he meant by he came to fulfill it. Secondly, my last 32 seconds, I'm going to say this. Everybody here has a human body. You have to look at your body that you are the CEO, the chief executive officer of your body. If you want to make a difference in this country, in this world, in your community, black, white, Asian, polka dots, take an accounting of your CEO, of your body. What have you done with your economy? So when you are looking at, I want more black businesses in the black community, how are you structuring your own personal economy to do that? So, you know, I'm looking at it like this. No matter who doesn't feel that Tony's life matters, that Christianity doesn't matter, nobody is going to stop me. Look at me and hear me well. Have the mindset. I don't care who hates me. I don't care who wants to rise up against me. I don't care who has a bullet waiting for me. Nobody is going to stop me. If I want to open up a business, if I want to write a book, if I want to start a church, I'm going to do it. Everybody, don't let nobody stop you. You are the CEO of your own body and future. Don't let nobody stop you.
All right, Chief, take it out, bro.
Hey, you know, I heard quite a bit about how to fix it. Right? And depending upon what other topic, gun control issue, race relations, whatever, take a look at the screen. This is how it can be fixed. Because you couldn't, I mean, it's a very diverse group of people. Right? We come from all over the place. We're like a family. We don't always agree, but at least we can air our differences and say where we need to be set, right? So if anybody has that question is, what do we do to move forward in this nation? Just look at here. Look at this. We're having a hard conversation. On topics that are uncomfortable. They're uncomfortable, but I like it. I like the uncomfortableness. It makes me nice. Anyway, as far as the gun relation issue, maybe that cliche is, see something, say something. If you go and just look at these instances of mass shooting, they always find somebody. Well, you know, I thought they were off a little bit. Blah, blah, blah. And they can call anyone.
Mm-hmm.
So call somebody. Pick up the phone. Call the FBI. Call someone that can do something about it. You never know when you're going to stop a mass incident. I'll tell you, this week, we've had, the last 2 weeks in my jurisdiction, we've had two incidents where supposedly children or students were going to bring guns to school. Guess what? We intervened. We stopped it. Never occurred. Somebody calls. That's all I got to say about that.
All right. And for me, I'm just going to end out with this. Thank you. Appreciate everybody. Love everybody. Waco, ATL, Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Appreciate everybody joining. Izzy T. John is gone. Big Joe couldn't make it. Reverend Tony and Hal. Appreciate everybody. Y'all have a good weekend, and we're out.